comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. If we can get our software to cooperate with us here, everything will be hunky-dory. This is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's the show where you matter. And I'm delighted that you're here this evening. I think you'll be delighted as well, wherever you happen to be. From coast to coast, from north to south, east to west, all around the globe. The K-Files normally goes out right after the show on Friday night. Well, tonight it went out before the show, right before the show. And the reason for that is because I have to do some things after the show in order to get ready for tomorrow night's special broadcast. Jerry Wills will be doing a weekend edition, and it will be in the members area. And so you want to be sure you join and get in on that. Be a part of that, okay? But I've got some things I have to do to make that happen. And so I really didn't have time after the show to keep to our normal schedule. But if you are not yet subscribed to the K-Files, be sure you do. It's our free weekly newsletter. Free. Let me say it again. Free weekly newsletter. No reason not to get it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't loan that email list out or sell it or lease it or rent it or any of that stuff. It's just for us to send you the K-Files, okay? Tomorrow, which will be April the 3rd, 2010, Jerry Wills is going to be hosting a special edition of, it's not a special edition of this show. It is Jerry Wills, but I don't know what else to call it. We're calling it special edition. And he's going to, it'll be at regular showtime. And in the members area, and he has asked for and he has been granted an interview with moi, and he says, I want you unplugged, and so I will be unplugged, hopefully not unhinged, but unplugged. And by that, he said, he means that he wants to be able to ask me questions about things that may not necessarily be in the genre of my show. And that's okay, because that's his show, okay? So I'll be there, and I'll be answering questions. I have no idea what the topics are. I have no idea what the questions will be, but I'll be there. And he's saying he may go into overtime. What does he call it? After hours. And so you know, if you want to get in on that, then he'll take calls from the audience, so you'll get to ask questions as well to moi unplugged. But if you want to get in on that, you know what you have to do. You have to be registered in our members area. And that costs 23¢ a day. That's $6.95 per month. Even cheaper if you go quarterly, and cheaper still if you go annually. We'll be back right after this. My guest this evening has been with us before. You may remember. His name is Ron Stewart, and he is quite an expert at not only photo analysis, but actually a new process of really getting down into these photos and bringing out what's there. I don't know if it has a name, but if it does, we'll let him tell us. Ron, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, how are you tonight?
I'm doing super.
Good.
Ron, does this process, have you named this process?
Not really. I have some mediocre names here and there have come up. But basically all it is a matter of a real simple example. Let's say today's technology takes a picture of an asteroid, and the best technological conditions that it could be done under would be, let's say, looking at the image of the asteroid in space, but it only being about the size of the eye of a needle. Now, you and I know that if that's the best that can be done under today's technology, there's no way that they could zoom in to the asteroid to see if it's an NEO, a near-Earth object that might threaten the Earth or something like that, like NT7 was a few years ago. But the difference is my technology can not only now zoom in to that object, but it can show it like our moon, and it can show almost as much detail. It can then go down and probably get closer and even show you what even the craters on the asteroid may look like, etc. So now take the same technology and apply it to anything. It would have many numerous applications, space exploration. In this case, if you wanted to get an object far away, like an anomaly, in this case, possibly a UFO, you know, it would have the possibility of being able to do that, too. It's not perfect. I never said it was perfect. It has about an 85 to 93% proficiency rate of being able to enhance the photo, and then the results are there. I mean, when you're doing something like UFOs, it's something you're trying to identify with in human terms, and the only thing you can do under the best conditions is try to put it in human terms that are the best identifiable things as possible, because this is a new area of exploration. And when you do, when you get into unknown areas of exploration, you have to have somebody to lay down the groundwork, and of course mistakes can be made. So if I do say something in this extrapolation, it's only because I'm trying to give a fair, honest opinion on what it may resemble so that we can identify with it in human terms.
Okay, that's fair enough. And but, you know, you point out something that I think is very interesting and important for us to sort of underscore in our own brains, and that is our ancestors did the same thing. With whatever technology they had, which was, if you go far enough back, just their eyes, they would see something, and then they would write about it and describe it and explain it in human terms with the vocabulary of their day. And that's what we're doing, the same thing.
Exactly.
All right, now, with this process, is this digital, or do you actually use film and negatives and chemicals to process the negatives? How does this happen?
Well, without giving away any patent rights that I possibly have or anything else like that, I will explain it this way. The ESO, which is the European Space Organization, basically came up with a new way beyond even what Hubble can do, from what I understand, to where they use a calibrating, you might say, focusing lens on a camera that slowly moves into the picture very slowly. It takes pictures of it in maybe 100 or 300 different pictures, but it's usually done over a period of 2 or 3 weeks, and they can actually get closer to a planet now than Hubble used to before the improvements were made in 2008. Now, suppose my system works basically the same. That would be a very easy idea to understand, that if you held a magnifying glass up to something and then you brought it to you a little closer then stopped, that's one calibration. You bring it up to you a little bit closer, that's another calibration. You bring it up a third time, that's another calibration. But now imagining doing that with something very far away 300 times, and that's basically what we're talking about.
Okay. Okay. So it basically then enables you to zoom in and to get good resolution and detail. Now, I've seen some of your work, and it's pretty impressive. And of course, it's quite famous because you've been on a number of radio shows around the country, and I guess around the world. You know, there are examples of what you've done out there on the internet. And when I was looking at some of those, just kind of, you know, thinking, well, you know, it's been a while since we've talked with Mr. Stewart, so let me see what's new out here. I found a file where you had actually dealt with these photographs that came from the SOHO satellite showing that there were some kind of objects around the sun. Now, these pictures of these objects, they were from NASA. NASA runs the SOHO satellite. And they created quite a stir around the world. And people began to talk about them. NASA gave an explanation. They said, well, it's not really objects what these are. These are sort of photographic artifacts caused by compression, which was caused by intense cosmic rays. But then they took these photographs off their site. Now, I just have a policy because of being an old cop that when information goes missing, the truth is usually right there in the hole. There's a reason why they don't want to talk about it. If this really was compression, if it was an artifact caused by compression, then why not leave the photographs on the site and put some expert testimony up there, some explanation explaining how that happens and why that is an artifact. But that's not what we got. What we got is the pictures went missing from the site. So tonight, I would like for you to sort of carry us through your work with these pictures and what you were able to see and what you were able to determine. And you did send me an example, and we'll be showing that on our TV station. Just walk us through this thing that you did with these pictures. Why did you get interested in these pictures? And then kind of walk us through to the conclusions you came to.
Well, as you know, things are not always as they seem or appear. And that can be very true also in what you see in an image. It's basically the same scenario as I gave with a magnifying glass. If you looked at an image and you held it 3 feet away from you and you could only see so much detail, but of course if you put a magnifying glass up to it or enlarge it, you're going to be able to see more. Mm-hmm. So in such a case where I've used this process now to zoom down to the object, things that you couldn't see, all of a sudden other objects start to possibly appear that you could not tell in the original photo, because now you're zooming down, you know, closer to what you're actually looking at, and other things then, you know, present themselves because they're enlarged. The thing is that I found is that not only was there one possible, and I will say this with this kind of carefulness, either a space anomaly or a possible UFO, I found that there were many of them that were so, as you will see in the photograph, I gave three examples, they're all so different. And here on Earth, when we look at something that's constructed, whether it be ancient culture or in today's society, we identify that a structure is something that looks something like it has uniformity, something that has parallel lines that are equal or vertical lines that are equal to each other, and the closer you get to it, the more detail is available. For example, you drive in a car, you're looking at a house, you know, half a mile away. Well, you cannot certainly see the detail at a half a mile that you could at a quarter of a mile. Then you get even closer, 300 feet away from the house, as you look at it from the highway, as you pass it in the car, of course you can see more detail. So it's the same thing here with this. As you are able to bring the images in closer, you're able to see things that normally you wouldn't see. And of course, as then the images are enhanced, the detail then it gets to a point to where, under the laws of physics, you know, you can only maximize the resolution in a photo so much. But I have found that usually with five or six enhancements is about the maximum, you can enhance any photo. And this is probably, this is basically the rudimentary effects of what I do with this process.
All right. Why did these pictures interest you? Did someone suggest to you that you might want to use your process on these pictures? Or
well, let me give you a story. And I know this is going to be very unusual, but I really had somebody send me an email from China. And they had seen some of my other work on the Internet. And, of course, now in China, they are a complete different type of government. And, of course, you know, the people there have had some exposure to the Internet, but my understanding is they may not have some of the freedoms we do. And, of course, they were interested in having details about this, and it was a university student who basically had contacted me and asked for some detail. And, of course, you know, he emailed me back and asked me basically if I could do something with a photo, and because, you know, I'm trying to be understanding of his situation and his need, I didn't mind helping him. So I sent him back the information, but then when I started getting into the photo and seeing some of the detail and what the possibilities of this cut could be, I mean, it pretty well fascinated me. So I took it up from that point onward. And I did a few photos, but the more I got into it, the more detail I saw and the more possible objects I saw, or anomalies or UFOs in outer space. And it is so vast and deep that you could literally spend a year or two on this subject and you'd never finish, in my opinion.
All right. Now, let's we're about 4 or 5 minutes away from a break. But let's get into this photograph that you sent me, because it's got some examples. And you have them numbered 1, 2, and 3. Those of you who are in our members area and you're watching the TV channel, if you look at number 1 has two arrows coming from it. And the top arrow shows you what appears in the SOHO photograph. If you just zoom in on the SOHO photograph, you get something like this. And then the bottom arrow is pointed to a red rectangle. And we have two objects, it looks like, in that red rectangle. So describe for us what we're looking at in this red rectangle here.
Well, you know, what I said to you earlier before the interview tonight was that when you're dealing with objects in and around the sun, because you have so much radiation, it certainly is going to affect, you know, some images more than others. On this image, what we're looking at is really a profile or side view of one object. The reason it looks like two different objects is because the middle part is blotted out by so much radiation and light that it just blocks out that area and it cannot be enhanced. That's the honest truth about that. The simplest thing to examine would be the left bottom corner of the red square. And if you look in there, if you look close enough, and if we were to, you know, go deeper into that, you would see it would look like if you're looking down a tunnel. And it has depth. The deeper you go, the more you can see, and there seems to be what look like vertical, you know, parallel structures. There seems to be some kind of indication of maybe possible uniformity as far as what we see is, or as far as what we can identify in human terms. And that basically could be the inside of this UFO, which maybe has, you know, the complexes and their structures and how they communicate and where they go and where they send out smaller ships and so forth. I mean, it's almost in the imagination, because it's really hard to understand what you're seeing in these terms. but I'm trying to put it as simply as I possibly can so that a person can try to identify with what may be here.
It's pretty interesting because it looks almost like, you know, if this were a top-down view, so that we're looking directly down from the top, there is what looks like an outer wall, and then a moat, and then an inner area. Kind of describe, we're looking at the side or at the end of this thing, is that right?
Well, really, let's put it this way. Pretend like you're flying over a city, okay, and you're in an airplane, you're looking out your rear window, and you're looking down at the tops of the buildings that are in the downtown area of the area.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of what you're viewing here.
Okay. All right.
So when you look at it, you know, it's not going to be like if you were flying low enough to where you could see a 10-story building and you're flying at 6 stories high, and then you can see the side of the building or the rectangular part of it standing vertically. But you're actually looking from the top down, and that's what you're looking at. Where in 2 and 3, that's not the case. In 2 and 3, you're looking at a side view of the object. Well, as a matter of fact, number 2 is kind of a catty corner view of the possible UFO, and number 3 is the side view of what you're looking at.
These are really very strange-looking objects. They don't have the smooth surface that I think a lot of us think about when we think about UFOs.
Right.
Now, were you able, I think we have time to get this answer in before the break. Were you able to determine that these are objects and not compression artifacts?
Well, here's the point. If I zoom in to one of these objects, and then, for example, if I see a symbol, or we'll put it, a structure that looks like a possible vision of what we might envision an alien would look like, which we have to identify them. Well, does the alien look human-like, humanoid, you know, like an animal, or does it have a dinosaur-like head? You know, I mean, these are things that we can identify with.
All right, we're going to have to step away for break. We'll get the rest of that when we come back. Don't go away, folks. More with Ron Stewart, and we're talking about really strange things around the sun. All right, welcome back, and we're talking with Ron Stewart this evening. And Ron, we were discussing, are these real objects, or are these the artifacts caused by compression, which, according to NASA, was caused by cosmic rays? Were you able to tell the difference between whether these were real objects or artifacts in the photography? And you were explaining that to us.
Well, first of all, let's look at it this way. Of course, this image is just one of many I could provide, and maybe in the future we can do this in another show. However, as you get closer to the image, you're going to see more and more detail as you zoom in to it. The first thing you can see in number 2, if you look at the top, is there seems to be, you know, a number of smaller areas that are rectangular-like in shape. Now, we associate rectangular areas when we look at something like a car or a plane or whatever like that as windows. So I'm not saying that these are windows, but they could be, you know, entrance ways or maybe an area that certain, maybe more than one alien species shares this entire ship. It would seem like that something this large, as some of the sun UFOs have been described, being almost the size of a planet or a planetoid or maybe smaller, that, you know, we're looking at immense objects, very immense objects. So, you know, we have to take a look at it that when you get into artifact decompression, you're looking at information that usually when you start looking at it, you notice not more detail, but less, because there's a loss of data information in the photo. Therefore, if you were able to notice more detail as you get closer and closer to what could be stipulated in spike, some as maybe, you know, artifact misrepresentation, then you should see less detail. And that's not the case here if I was to show other photos. Now, take number three, for example. If you are driving on a highway toward a city, what this kind of reminds me of and resembles to me, if you look at the top part of it, would be like the skyline of a whole bunch of tall buildings close together. Is this a floating city, which is also a UFO in outer space? I don't know. All I can tell you what it resembles to me, and I've seen these a couple of times before in looking at other objects in outer space also. So it's interesting, though, that there are similarities to what I can say here and what I've seen before. And, of course, if people want to see that information, I have no problem with emailing them that or making it soon available in a video, whatever, so that they can, you know, obtain that information.
Okay, then, so from your point of view, from your perspective, having done this process and taken a look at these, you're saying that these do not appear to you to be artifacts of the photography, but real objects.
Well, yes, and then the reason I say that is because if you, for example, get up close to one, now let's look at it in this viewpoint. Suppose you have a number of intelligent beings that are aliens, but they are so diverse in their form of life that they don't even communicate the same. Maybe some that would, communicate in deep groans like a whale or an elephant, which can't be heard. Maybe other ones have high-pitched, you know, sounds like, like a porpoise or something like that, or birds or so forth, or even as some dinosaurs are believed to have communicated. The point I'm trying to make is that because there's such a large diversity of possible life in the universe, which is mathematically impossible maybe for there not to be some there, the point is that they could very well communicate by having symbols on their ships, for example, what one alien would look like. That would be like a picture-writing symbol saying this alien occupies this part of the ship, or is also helping to operate this ship, or lives on this ship, and is working with other ones. Now, as you got closer to these objects, you may see, for example, an alien, maybe a symbol or an anomaly that has a shape. And let me give an example. Suppose you saw one that had the shape of a dinosaur head, like a Tyrannosaurus. Well, we know about where the eyes are located on a Tyrannosaurus. We know where the proximate nose would be located because of skeletal remains. We know where the mouth would be located and the teeth. But now if we say similar anatomical comparisons in the alien-like species, but it's an intelligent species compared to an animal, then, you know, what else can you associate it with on human terms? So then, you know, but if you see this happen once, twice, three, 10 times, 20 or more, I mean, it starts to form a pattern, and it's just not once. It can be understandable to be randomality or coincidence, but 3 times, 5 times, 10, 20. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, they have their own ways of identifying probably each other and communicating in ways that we still don't understand.
As you went closer and closer in on these objects, did you see any such symbols on these objects?
Yes, I did.
On all three of these that are in the picture, you saw such symbols?
Yes. Even though we can't see them here because they're too small and they're all in this combination photo, if I were to send you photos and you were to show them on your website or wherever, I could give you some examples of this, yes. And I could even do a step-by-step enhancement and get closer and closer little by little and even send you a video if people wanted to look at it, and then maybe, you know, they could see it for themselves.
Man, I'll tell you what, I wish you would do. Have you already done that video?
No.
Okay.
I'll do it for you, and I'll do it for this show.
Okay.
But and I'll work on it, and we can maybe have this on another show, or at least you can post it on your website, and that would help you.
You know where it would be fantastic for us to do this? Would be on a Saturday morning instead of the evening shows. We do some special broadcasts in our members area, and we could do it on a Saturday morning, and just get everybody all gathered around to take a look at it. And by the way, thank you, and I look forward to seeing that video.
Okay, I'll send that to you very soon.
Were you able to determine the size of these objects?
Oh, you know, when you're looking at size in outer space like this, it's very hard. But now let's just think about this for a minute. Our sun is extremely, extremely large. Mm-hmm. And you could fit many thousands of Earths inside, you know, just the area, the circumference area of our sun, much less the corona itself or anything else that's, you know, energy that's emitting outward in that circumferential area. But you're looking at objects that I'm guessing, all right? But if the objects were miles and miles and miles long or high, that's almost incomprehensible by us as humans, but I would not put it as being impossible. So, you know, that's something that really needs to look at close.
Well, you know, some folks that I've seen on the internet have said, you know, these are planet-sized. Would you concur? I know it's your speculation, but would you say these are planet sized? Well then, we have lost Ron Stewart's audio. Interesting spot too, huh? Okay, we're going to try and get him back on here with us. And that's not working. Ron, are you there? Okay, he's not there. All right, we will try to get him back. I don't know what happened. Just all of a sudden, he was gone. So we'll try this again. I'm not completely surprised by all of that. Okay, Ron, are you there? Are you there, Ron?
Yes, I am now.
Okay, I don't know what happened, but we do have that happen to us once in a while when we're really getting close to hot information, pun intended. We get interrupted.
Well, it does happen.
Okay, so I know it's your speculation. I know you're just guessing. I understand that, but would you say these are planet-sized?
My own impression from what I've seen is that they're at least moon-sized. Yeah. And I know that's really hard maybe for some people to fathom, but when you look at them and if you were to actually, you know, painstakingly even put one inside the circumference of the sun, each one, you would soon see you'd get tired and you could take that area and multiply it by so many factors and you would, you know, get a pretty high number that so many could fit. So we know that the sun is 93 million miles away. And of course these objects are being picked up by, you know, different spacecraft and so forth. But the point is that, just to be able to have this in size of the compared to the sun, yes, they are fairly large. And, it's almost unimaginable that you could find a UFO that large in the universe. But I mean, we may be just youngsters compared to what the civilizations there have existed in the length of time that they've lived. And to them, I mean, there's probably no comparing in what knowledge is. So, you know, we have to be open-minded to the possibilities that if we're going to explore space and if we're going to be prepared to try to, you know, look at if there's life on other planets, what are we going to do when we finally find it? See, that's the thing is, if a person's not open to those ideas now, then if something does happen, we have to be prepared as a society to say, well, we're not alone. There is someone else out there.
On yesterday's show, Ron, I read an article, or I didn't read the article. I referred to the article and read a quote or two from it that came out yesterday, in which it was being reported that astronomers, using new technology and new methods, new techniques, have pointed their telescopes now at regions of space that have already been mapped. And in fact, they've already kind of pretty much mapped the universe. And using this new technology, looking for light waves that they call hydrogen alpha instead of the visible light waves, they have discovered that there were 90% more galaxies than they already knew about. Last week, right, we didn't know about them. This week, we do. Now, you think of the vastness of what we already knew about and add 90% to it. And then
10 years ago, before quantum physics was invented, physics was around, and they thought that was the maximum you could do in mm-hmm. mathematics, and yet we were proven wrong, weren't we?
Yes, we were. Yeah. And but just since last week, thinking of us as the only intelligent life in the universe was, in my estimation, fairly impossible. I know there are people that do think that, but I don't see how. Now add 90% to the universe, and it becomes not fairly impossible. I think it becomes absolutely impossible to think of us as being the only intelligent life in that universe. It's just incomprehensible to me that we would be the only intelligent life. And I would have to say that compared to some of these other civilizations, we're barely intelligent. Just barely. All right, we have to take a break, and we will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Ron Stewart. Ron, let me ask you this. Now, we understand if you say this looks like a window, or this looks like it could be an entrance where perhaps some other ships could come in and out. We understand you're just saying that's what it looks like to you. It has that appearance. You're not saying that that is actually what it is. We also understand when you say you see these symbols in the photographs that look like to you depictions of some type of alien species, you're not saying that's exactly what it is, but it looks like that to you. Am I right?
Well, that's right, and it could look that way to somebody else who might. Well, let me put it to you this way. If you took a picture of a dinosaur mm-hmm. and the shape and outline of the head, and you looked at the eyes, and you put a shape of this possible alien symbol next to it, then all I'm asking a person to do is to look at it and say, well, yeah, that could look a little similar there. Or it does look like it has maybe some type of reptilian-type features, or this or that or the other, or those would look like eyes like you would see on a dinosaur, or as far as what we know, or a reptile. I mean, those are the only things we can really, as human beings, associate with. So, you know, if it looks that way, and of course, you know, we have to remember not everybody sees images the same. And here's my example. It's like witnessing a bus accident in an intersection. You have one person standing on each corner. Their bus is going to block the view of what happened by the other person on the other side. But now you take all four ways of looking at it, each one is telling the truth because they each have and seen a perspective of it the other person didn't see. Some people just have, you know, all they can do is see a flat image. They have no depth perception. Some people can see in 3D. Some people can see in color in all those ways. It'd be the difference between a person who had no creative ability and a person who does. So does that make everybody wrong when they look at that image and they each talk a little bit about it in a different perspective? No. It may just be a combination of what the total truth really is.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the old parable of the blind men and the elephant. And four blind men, and each one was touching a different part of the elephant and described this is what an elephant is. Each one had part of the truth. But, Of course, the elephant you have to put it all together in order to get the whole elephant. Okay, now, after you looked at these photographs and you did your process with them, and I understand you went much closer than what we're looking at in this composite picture. But after you did that, were you personally satisfied that these are some type of alien craft? Or do you scratch your head and say, I just don't know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. If we notice detail in something, and then as we actually look at it closer and closer, the more detail we see. When there is no detail, then what we basically assume is that there is no intelligence there, because it would take something to make all that detail come about once it gets past certain numbers in order to present itself as either, you know, just an abstract object or anomaly, or something that could be able to be identifiable as having been directed by some sort of intelligence. And the only thing we can extrapolate on and identify with on Earth is by what we already know. But so what we're trying to do is find things in what we know and what we identify with here on Earth and what we have in the human experience, and see if we can see similarities in what is not known. And then if we can put the connection together and we keep on seeing it repeat itself in patterns over and over again, I mean, that's basically, you know, observable evidence.
All right. So then you're seeing what appears to you to be structures caused by intelligence. Would that be right?
I would say that, because when I go down to look at a skyline on a city, and I can see if it's a long rectangular vertical object that's protruding object that's sticking up 500 to 600, 700 feet or more in the sky, and I see that it has uniformity as far as, you know, square windows possibly in the building being spaced apart evenly at the same type of mathematical intervals on center. And then you can look at that being one story, two story, three stories. And then if I see the same similarities in objects that I may see in these things, mm-hmm. I mean, you have to question yourself and then say, well, if you see it in one object or two objects, that may be one thing. But what if you just keep on experiencing this over and over and over again? And then you ask other people, well, do you see this? Or am I blind, or am I not seeing it right? And they say, well, I see that. I see the same shape. I see this. So, you know, it's kind of like if you're kind of reassuring yourself even by asking other people. And if they see the same thing, and many people see the same thing, I mean, could they all be wrong?
Well, that's a good point. The cover-up spin doctors would say yes. They would say that, number one, your eyes are wrong 100% of the time when you look at things outside of Earth. No matter what you see, no matter who took the picture, no matter how clear it is, they're going to tell you that you're not seeing what you think you're seeing. So your eyes are wrong 100% of the time. Which, of course, I would say, what utter stupidity. If your eyes are wrong 100% of the time, you couldn't even function.
If that's the case, why do we have Hubble? And why do we say a planet looks spherical? And then if they're saying, well, if that's not a spherical shape, even though Hubble took a picture of it, and it looks more like a peanut, well, the point is, then why even make images in the first place and say that it's supposed to resemble a planet? And that's what you're mm-hmm. trying to teach people. And basically, I mean, that doesn't make sense, nor is it logical.
Well, that's true. And the cover stories don't make sense, and they're not logical. And that's the point. You know, they want you to believe that it's anything except exactly what you're looking at, you know. And I say again, if these photographs are really messed up because they have artifacts caused by compression, if that's really what this is, then why did they disappear off of the website? What you would want to do is use that photograph and have some expert write an article to explain and to give his analysis and explain why that's compression. But you wouldn't, here's the deal. You wouldn't do that, Ron, if it's really not compression, because the instant that expert writes that article and they put it on the website, other photographic experts around the world would look at that analysis and laugh and go public with why it's balderdash. And so you can't risk that. So what can you do? Well, you tell the story that it's compression, and then you remove the photographs. That.
Well, may I make an example of something we all can identify with in a very simple manner?
Mm-hmm.
We take, for example, when this country first became a country, we have people who were made fun of, even people like Lewis and Clark. When they came back with stories and they said, look, we saw this kind of animal, and we saw this, or this, or this. I mean, you know, they were laughed at, and people thought they were utterly crazy. Until people later on were bringing back animal carcasses. They were showing what these animals looked like. Or, you, for example, a scientist that first discovered the platypus. I mean, here's an animal. It's got a tail like a beaver, and it's got, you know, webbed feet, and it's got a bill like a duck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they thought he was insane.
And it's a mammal, and it lays eggs.
He was a scientist into a Looney Tune bin.
But, mm-hmm.
You know, they had to be explorers to find things out first, and then you build on the knowledge after that. And how do we know that maybe this cannot be the beginning of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. All right, now let me ask you this. After you looked at this, and you came to the conclusion in your mind that, hey, you know, these things look like they were built by intelligent beings. These show signs of intelligent structure. After you did that, does it bother you in any way to think that these massive, massive spaceships are in close orbit around the sun?
Well, let me put it to you this way.
You know, I asked the question and I wasn't watching the clock. What we're going to have to do here is step away for a break, and we'll get that answer when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We shall return. Welcome back, and my guest this evening is Ron Stewart, and we're talking about his work with this very special, very technical photograph analysis process. And I had just asked the question, when you looked at these and you said, you know what, that looks like it was built by intelligent beings. And you realize that they are at least moon-sized, and they're in orbit, close orbit, around the sun. Did it bother you in any way? Did it upset you or make you a little nervous?
Well, no, it kind of awed me. I mean, who are we to think that we're so intelligent, which, you know, human beings are very intelligent. There's highly intelligent people in the world, but we don't know everything about everything that there is to know.
Mm-hmm.
And man constantly learns. And just some of the previous examples that you talked about as far as what scientists could do now is realizing there's 90% more possible universes than what we viewed last week. I mean, even technology itself, you can't even keep up with it. It changes so fast now, probably every 6 months you'd be out of date if you didn't have the latest. So, you know, if we can experience this in our human experience, now think about civilizations that may be, you know, many, many thousands of years or more older than we are, or possibly eons older, and, you know, what they have been able to accumulate and acquire in knowledge, and then if they combine as a, you know, organized manner all their cultures together, I mean, we cannot even imagine what they could be capable of doing in technology, and we are so under them with all this technology. If they had this in outer space and could do these kind of things that we are maybe seeing here, I mean, we totally may not understand it, but how could we understand it until we were able to acquire what they know?
Well, you're right. You know, one of the things that's really awesome about these is that you would think there would be no way to be in orbit that close to the sun, both because of the heat and the gravity. And yet there they are. And they've obviously conquered the problem of heat, and somehow they're conquering the problem of gravity that would think would pull them into the sun, but it doesn't seem to bother them. I'm sorry?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to invite our audience to join us, and folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Or toll free 888-223-4599. If you're in the USA or if you're in Canada, that 888 number is a toll free number. If you need to call me toll free, you can do so. Now, I don't have an international toll free number, so what I've done is I've established something called a flash message if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada. If you're in the USA or Canada and you send me a flash message, I'm not going to get it. I won't, and if it does squeak through our filters, I'm not going to read it, okay? Because I pay for you to call me. I'll pay for the call if you need me to. But for those who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, I guess my version of toll-free is the flash message. And you go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the link. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hello, my name is Travis from Kansas.
Travis?
Yes.
Okay, Travis, are you a first-time caller, Travis?
Yes, I am.
Oh, we got to give you some applause for that. And Travis, what's on your mind this evening?
Well, I don't get to listen to your show live, but I get to watch it when I get home, your recordings.
Uh-huh.
And you had a gentleman on from MUFON the other day.
Yeah.
Do you know if you personally or he can find out any more information on the Jonathan Reed story?
Well, there's lots of information about the Jonathan Reed story. Jonathan Reed is actually not Jonathan Reed, and he's not a doctor. His last name is Rutter, I believe.
Rutter?
Yeah, Rutter, R-U-T-T-E-R. And he was pretty much completely debunked back at the time when he first started appearing on the Art Bell Show. And people that knew him and knew who he was, started writing articles that were posted on the internet, and they're still out there. So that's pretty much and he never would allow anybody. He never allowed anybody the photographs to analyze them, and then the alien being got up and walked out of his freezer and out of his garage. So
still had the bracelet.
Yeah, or his basement, wherever it was. So that story has been pretty well thoroughly debunked.
Okay, because last I heard, Jaime Marsan was really dug in deep into it, and I thought maybe it could be still viable.
It may be, but you know, it was pretty thoroughly debunked by people that really wanted to believe that it was true. But he's not a Seattle or Washington State based psychologist. He's not a doctor, and his name is not Jonathan Reed.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Sorry about the mistake.
All right. Thanks.
And hopefully, get some more information on that.
All right. 623-444-5889, toll free 888-223-4599. And we're talking this evening with Ron Stewart, and we're talking about these things that are in orbit around our sun and his very special photographic process by which he's been able to zoom in on them. You know, Ron... when I look at this photograph, and especially when I look at number two and number three, these really look like if you were flying over a city, and the city's lit up at nighttime, and you're flying over the city, and you can see right. ambient light down there around the buildings and so forth, and then a few spots that are lit up.
Yes. Well, you know, in outer space, there's no upside down or right side up. I mean, we only have that because we have solid ground to put our feet on.
Yeah.
But in outer space, you know, you could even go into something upside down and you'd be approaching it from the right, you know, position.
Mm-hmm.
So how they would build these ships may be, you know, according to how they have to fly into different parts of the object. And that's something that, you know, I've never mentioned before, but that is a possibility.
In your PDF files that you put out, two, part one and part two, with photographs and a report about all of what we're talking about here tonight. You've got a photograph where you show what looks, you say, like perhaps an entrance, and I'll say in the right side of one of these objects. An entrance perhaps where other craft could fly into it and go inside. Is that one of these three? Is that particular photograph one of these three?
I think what you might be referring to is what we talked about earlier is number one in the bottom left corner. There are certain enlargements in that PDF document, which, you know, the advantage of that is that people can enlarge. They can just go to the top and go to the enlargement factor, which is the plus sign, and they can magnify it and study the objects themselves that way, which that allows them to look at it a lot closer. So, yes, those do have some advantages because of that. Of course, you could put that in a video, but by the PDF document, they can then take as much time as they want to and study it and scroll to something else, or even scroll back again and be able to refer to something if they want to be able to try to confirm what they're reading in the PDF documents themselves.
Okay, we have a flash message here from Tim in the Netherlands, and he says, is this technique purely based on digital pixels, and have you used this zooming technique for anything other than UFO or anomaly research so that it could be compared and verified?
This technology, you know, it's brand new. We're trying to get it established in the space exploration area. That, of course, you know, it takes time. And we're in the process now of trying to making progress in that area and trying to be able to see what it could be used in that area. Now, the reason for that is that if you use it in space exploration, then suppose you wanted to zoom into a planet or you wanted to zoom in and get more detail on the planet. We're taking that in steps because you have to stop and think about it for a minute. If this technology is really what I say it is, then the point is it could be ahead of its time. And then this is what I do believe it is. And, of course, I have no trouble with being able to, you know, show people how it works, except you have to understand that I could have somebody with me and I could show them, you know, this is done, and they would be able to experience what I experienced. But, of course, they'd have to sign, you know, documents in order to be able to do that, because I had to protect myself legally. So, you know, I have no problem with trying to be honest about it and saying up front that I'm hoping it can be used for space exploration, because you imagine if this technology could be used with Hubble. I mean, if Hubble users can zoom in on a galaxy, you know, 10,000 light years away, imagine what they could do with exoplanets and so forth, being able to zoom into them.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing exactly what their other instruments say is so. For example, you take Fomalhaut B. They say it's a hot planet. Their instruments measure that it's probably a volcanic planet. They also measure that the planet is probably a very young solar system, maybe in the order of 100 million years old. So, you know, if these things can then also be verified by images in my technology, for example, you'll say you could use this technology with Hubble to zoom into the planet, and then you're able to see what could be, you know, by scientists seen as volcanoes, or that it has a very hot surface.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden the unknown becomes connected with the known and becomes more scientifically accepted. So, yes, these are areas that I'm trying to get it established right now. I had basically just got into the UFO area because I had people say, well, you know, we've had pictures for a long time that have never had been able to become more tangible, and we would like to have a little more evidence as to what we look at. But the problem with this is that it seems like when you get into these things, you think you're going to look at one thing, and it usually becomes much more involved and detailed and complex than what you're ready for. And the understanding of it just takes a while to be able to understand what you're looking at.
Okay, now is it all digital based, or and I asked this earlier, but I'm still not clear on this. Is this based on digital photography, or are you using actual film that you have to develop?
Well, like I say, it's calibrated images. That is stop, start, stop, start. In other words, you take the image and go at a certain distance,
mm-hmm.
and then you zoom into it and stop. You have to recalibrate it. It has to automatically refocus itself. You take a picture, and then you are able then to go deeper into it, and then again.
Yeah, but as you capture the images, are you capturing them on film, or are you capturing them on digital?
Digital film and also digital images.
Okay, so it's both. Okay. All right, 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. We have a flash message from Kevin in Australia. We'll get to that in just a moment. I have a question, though. And I have to ask it now because I'm an old guy, and as it runs through my head, I'll forget it in another minute. All right, so here's the question. You have seen on these objects symbols that you think look to you like images of some type of alien. Okay, now you've done a whole bunch of this type of photo analysis. You've done a bunch of this with UFOs that are out in space. Have you seen...
Yes, and on Earth.
And on Earth, but let's stick with the ones that are out in space.
Okay.
For the purpose of this question. Have you seen any of these symbols repeating? In other words, you see it in this photograph, and then here's another photograph from a completely different day, a different part of the sky, different looking craft, but the symbol is the same as what you saw on another one. Have you seen repeating symbols?
I have not seen identical repeating symbols, but I have seen symbols that do have, you know, striking similarities. And let me give an example. If you were to put in what we see into different categories, either as human, human-like, humanoid, animal, reptilian, etc., then when you look at these things in those categories and try to compare them with images that we see on Earth of animals or whatever like that, and you identify with the similarities that they have, yes, many images seem to repeat themselves in almost looking the same, but not identically. And what that tells me is that there could be a great diversity in the different kind of categories of different life in the universe that we even may be looking at.
All right, now these objects that we're looking at around the sun are at least moon-sized. At least that's your estimation of it. Okay.
Well, close to it or a little or near that size.
Okay, yeah.
What I can tell.
All right. Have you seen other objects out in space previous to these that were anywhere near that size?
Not quite that large. I've seen some nearly that large and some that might be getting close to that, being at least maybe one-fifth to one-fourth the size of these objects. Yes, I've seen those.
But these are the largest ones you've seen, right?
So far, yes.
How many objects did you notice out there in orbit around the sun?
There's numbers of them I have not even yet been investigated. Up to this date, I would estimate at least 15, 20, 25 at the most.
I've had a couple of guests on this show, different guests, that have said that we are thinking erroneously if we think that these aliens have a home planet. They don't need a planet because their ship is big enough for everything for them to live in, you know. Would you concur with that, or you think that's off base?
No. I would think there's some validity to that, yes.
So it sort of brings the Star Wars Death Star image into a little bit of reality, if these things are planet-sized or if they're moon-sized. And look, there are planets the size of the moon. Maybe not in our solar system, but there are planets the size of our moon. And then there are moons out there that are bigger than our moon. So our moon is fairly planet-sized. So it kind of brings that Death Star thing into focus as a possible reality, although we know it's in a science fiction movie. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky calling.
Hello, Mike.
And I had a case one time that I was investigating, which you're familiar with, Oscar Jordan's story. And Oscar claimed when he was taken up inside this vehicle that it was as though he were moved into a different world environment totally. He came to understand that these vehicles were self-sufficient. They could travel anywhere they wanted to go. They didn't have to be stopping over for refueling, that everything about them was self-contained, and that the smaller ones would come inside our atmosphere and the larger ones would be way off our planet. And now, you know, James Horak has said that these things out here are task-driven machines and that they don't have people at the controls guiding them. They're sort of like a program, I guess. I don't know if it's self-programming or what, but they have things to do, and they do them. And they don't have the emotional factor in that we do.
And so what do you think about these photographs that we're looking at?
Those are intriguing, what I saw of them.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see a little bit bigger view than what I'm getting on the TV. But, yes, they're intriguing. And, you know, one of them looks like it's a little gold, solid gold, you know, the one on my right. and it almost looks like a little statue, like a little Buddha type statue, as you'd see. And then the other one does look like a dragon head or something sticking out, and with like a walled perimeter, just like a perimeter, just like you said. So then it does look like we're going down into this. What is your website?
Are you asking Ron or me?
Yeah, Ron. What's your website, Ron?
I'm working on it right now. It's under construction. Hopefully it'll be up in about 2 weeks or less. I'm sorry about that, but that's something I'm just have so much information that it's just taking a lot of time to get it in order.
Well, let me say that the amazing in the size difference, you have basically little dots that we're seeing under normal circumstances, and you've blown them up there to look like Kevin said, like cities maybe being observed from above. Like if you were flying over South America and you were looking down and you saw these cities down there. These are great
exactly.
photographs.
Well, thank you.
All right, keep up the good work. Kevin, we'll talk to you later.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. You know, if Ron, if we take a look at picture number two, on the left extremity, well, we'll say the northwest corner of the picture number two, it looks like there are two very, very tall towers with some kind of sphere on top of each one of them.
Yes.
Those would be miles high, wouldn't they? Like a mile or two or more.
Really, to be honest, I don't know how high they are, but they would be extremely, extremely high.
Yep.
And, you know, these things, I mean, they're going to have some type of containment field to be able to hold in, you know, whatever they do in order to make these things work. Because if they're in outer space, and of course, you know, they're flying into this ship, they have to have some way to connect to the inside of the ship where, of course, they can then go to different parts of the ship, you know, maybe different forms of life and so forth. But, you know, like you said, there, as we would get closer, which I told you, and I gave you my word.
I hate to do it. We have to take a break. The music has started. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Petersound.
Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, so I was wondering if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, how would they be able to do that?
Okay, you're talking to Ron?
Yeah.
Okay.
They can get in contact me at my email address, and my email address is R-O-N-S, Rons, just like my name, and 475@gmail.com. Let me restate that. R-O-N-S, 475@gmail.com.
Okay. Do you have a lot of time on your hands, or are you strapping for time too? Are you doing this just on a side job or on? Because
well, this is not all I have to do. No, I have a lot of other projects in the works, and I'm also working on some other things. But yes, this is something that interests me. And, of course, you know, I'm trying to provide information that, you know, can make progress in the future, and it can be built on. I mean, let's put it this way. We all, when we get into something new, and something that's never been done before, we want to build a good foundation. Sometimes building that foundation, if you never built one like that, you've got to find out how to build it and how to build it right. in doing so, of course you're going to make mistakes and this and that and the other. But the point is, as long as you correct those mistakes and then improve that and then build upon that and make it solid, then what comes after that, I firmly believe, will then be able to be a sound principle to build the future on.
All right. Ryan, thanks for the call. Are you familiar with the photographs taken by John Leonard Walson?
Some of them, yes.
Have you done any analysis of those?
No, I haven't.
He's got some really interesting photographs. And, you know, he's using a telescope to get these photographs. And I'm just wondering, with your process, if we could sort of look in the windows, so to speak, of those craft that he photographs. All right, back to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, I was just wondering, do you take photos that are taken by somebody else's camera or and analyze those? Like, what the reason why I'm asked is because...
is this Ryan?
That I think I could...
Okay, hang on. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, this is Ryan in Washington.
Oh, okay.
I got disconnected.
No, I cut you off, or the system did, because the 3 minutes was up, but go ahead.
Oh, I have some photographs that I think you would absolutely, they're straight from NASA, but I think you would absolutely be enthralled with, and these include symbols on Mars, and just yesterday, the high-rise satellite photographed what appears to be four metallic spheres on the surface of Mars. And there's other pictures I could send you, and I think you could probably spend hours and hours and hours on it. So I just want to know how to contact you. You said just to email you then, huh? Is there a way to call you? Or
That's fine. Yes, you can email me.
Okay, I'll email you then with some stuff, and maybe keep you busy. All right.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right. Folks, remember, the system is set up so that you have 3 minutes on air, okay? That's so we can get as many people in as possible. And so, you know, give us one call per show, okay? But we do want to hear from you. All right, Kevin in Australia has sent us a flash message, and he says, Happy Easter weekend to all the folks in the USA who celebrate Easter. Mr. Stewart, what is your hypothesis on the orb-shaped UFOs, and are they retrieving some type of plasma energy? Are you with us, Ron?
Yes, I am, but he cut out. I couldn't hear him.
No, I was reading a flash message here from Kevin, and he wants to know if you have a hypothesis on the orb-shaped UFOs and whether they are retrieving some kind of plasma energy.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we... that there's so many of these possible anomalies around the sun. And that, to me, if there was one or two occurrences or maybe possibilities of these things existing, then, you know, that would might be something we would just say, well, they're here for a visit. But to see so many, to me, that seems that they have a definite purpose. And why they're always just around our sun and not other parts of our solar system, I mean, that is a good deductive reasoning as far as what the possibility of that could be. Yes, I think it's possible that for some reason they may use the sun as a massive source to try to maybe re-energize their ships, or maybe they have a way of interconnecting with that energy and transforming it into another form of energy, maybe matter, antimatter. I mean, we don't know, but my point is that certainly, their source of their energy for their ships, because their ships itself might be so massive, they would need a replenishment source as big as a sun just to replenish a ship the size that may be the size of a planetoid or the moon. I mean, that would make sense to me, and I hope it would make sense to other people out there, too.
All right. He has a second question, and the second question is, could it be that what they're doing is some type of mass solar ejection prevention mechanism that they're placing around the sun?
Well, you know, we only have a technology that can is capable of detecting so many things that's happening in and around the sun. It's very strange, though, that ever since these pictures started to be taken, that even after, you know, these images came out, there have been additional images that have been coming out, and NASA's been taking, and it's been available through different spacecraft, that, you know, to show that there's possible anomalies or... But you have to stop and think for a minute, why have they been occurring now for over 2 months?
Oh, you're right. Do you think, now, I understand, I think our audience understands we're calling for speculation here, but what's your speculation? Do you think, well, let's see here. All right. Did we lose you again?
Yeah, so.
Okay.
But to get back what we were talking about, for them to be able to have so many of these anomalies over such a long period of time now, I mean, we usually don't see, from what I understand, these kind of, physical phenomenon happening within the sun itself, where it would produce so many anomalies over such a long period of time. I mean, solar flares can last, you know, sometimes for a few weeks like that. But this is really an extended long period of time, and the longer it lasts, the more questions, of course, it seems to raise.
Do you think there's any kind of relationship between these things around our sun and all these earthquakes and harsh, severe storms that we've been having?
You know, I really don't know. We know that sometimes, the moon can affect the waves of the ocean. It can bring in a high tide, a low tide. And we know that that's a scientific fact, and that's been known for a very long time. We don't know if maybe some of these effects of what we're seeing in and around the sun and because of what's being done is causing some things to happen. But we have to, base it on what we know. And to assimilate the information, with the best methods that we have, that's about as far as we're going to go until we have a technology that's going to be able to take in more information, it would seem.
Well, you know, earthquakes are not new. Tsunamis are not new. Volcanoes are not new. Very harsh snowstorms are not new. But what is new is all this stuff ganging up on us all at once. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, but I'm just wondering out loud if perhaps these additional bodies, these moon-sized objects around the sun may be having some kind of effect upon the Earth that's causing all that to happen. And it's pretty interesting to me that this stuff seems to have started right about the same time it didn't start, but it seems to have intensified right about the same time when these objects began showing up around our sun.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yes, it is very interesting.
It's also interesting that it was predicted that this solar cycle was going to be by far more intense than the last one. And in terms of sunspots and coronal mass ejections and so forth, it's supposed to be by far more severe than our last one. And it's been hardly a burp. There's just almost nothing to this one.
Right, and of course, the surprise of things is what's yet to continue to come.
Oh, yeah.
We just have to wait and see.
If you had to guess, would you guess that these are just visitors? Or would you guess that these are people that are getting ready to do something?
Well, let me put it to you this way. I've been through a lot of images, and I have never, you know, here's my point, is that evidently if these civilizations are there, they've been around for a long time. Now, they certainly have had the technology to, if, you know, people want to think about them taking over this planet or this or that or the other. I mean, they've had the ability, evidently, to do that at any time they wanted to because their the technological advantage is so advanced. However, what I see in these images and from what I can tell and what my impression is that what you have here are many versatile possible cultures that have learned how to, you know, work together, and they have to have some sort of organized order and established order of things in order to do this, or they could not accomplish to build, you know, such massive ships or to build such massive technologies. If you look at one ship and see many different symbols on it, and they were of all the same type, then it would, you could say, well, yeah, I mean, maybe these are all symbols of maybe just one culture. But, you know, I have not seen that. On these ships, there's, I mean, to me, there's sometimes what even appear to be maybe possibly 10s or 20s or 30s or 50 or even hundreds of different, you know, symbols, which I'm wondering if each symbol, for example, represents a particular culture or planet in the universe.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Ron Stewart, and our telephone number is 623-444-5889, or toll-free 888-223-4599. Or if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. But whether you're going to call or if you're going to send a flash message, you've got to do it quick, because we're on final approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. Ron, I would assume that using the technology you use is not inexpensive. I would assume that it is expensive. Am I correct? Well, apparently we have lost Ron again. All right, let's see if we can get him back. These are the types of shows where I expect things like this to happen. And we'll see if we can get him back with us here in just a moment. But if you have some question or if you have some comment, give us a call and we will attempt to get you on the line with Ron, all right? And let's see if we can get him here. And I believe we probably will. And we will see if he's back with us. Ron, are you back with us now? Nope, it's ringing.
Ron Stewart.
Hello, Ron.
Hi, how are you? Good to see you again.
It's been an amazing, amazing journey, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
It's not unique, though. This kind of thing happens when we've got someone on that's getting us too close to stuff they don't want us to know about. It happens. All right. Ron, I would assume the technology that you're using is not inexpensive.
No, it is.
It is inexpensive?
Let me put it to you this way. if NASA, and I honestly believe this and believe I can prove it, but if NASA had this technology right now, they could save, in my belief, the American taxpayers billions and billions, maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars. And if I can do this from my prototype in my computer at home, you imagine that if it was even in software, anyone could do it, okay? But my point is that I'd like to invite any of the professional or government agencies that in the event they want to use this, you know, for space exploration, they can. But if the taxpayers keep sending ships out into space, I mean, there's a point of saturation where if something's 5 light years away and it has to go the speed of light to get there, I mean, we won't be able to get no information back until 5 more years. So, see, there comes a point to where robotics and sending, you know, spaceships is fine, but if you can use something that can zoom into a planet and zoom into places that they know where they've discovered possible another water planet or life like on Earth or whatever, I mean, that would be the thing to gather information and know more accurately where you want to go and not go. In the meantime, with the economy, especially the way it is, it would not put as much stress on the American people. So that is really something solid to think about, because if what I have is and what I'm telling you is true, in which I could keep on proving it over and over again, do 1,000, 2,000 more images, I mean, where do you draw the line? The point is that eventually there's going to have to be some acceptance of saying, hey, there's got to be something to this, or why could he keep on producing these things? I mean, I have imagination, but I certainly can't imagine hundreds of these different things, and I couldn't even draw them in time or paint them in time or put them together in time to do this. So It's impossible for one human being to do this, because some of this has to be done, and it takes time to do it when you're working with equipment and things like that. And I'm just one person right now that's doing this. So, you know, it's something that I would like to see used in the future for, you know, the benefit of mankind. I mean, if you can imagine zooming down to the inside of a bacteria 100 times deeper than what you can go now, or, you know, even more than that, or to a planet or wherever. I mean, the applications are endless. You can even reduce the image to, let's say right now, there are scientists know taking an image or any written information, as small as you can reduce it is about 10 times its size. But if I could take this technology and information that would go from your email to someone else's, can you imagine having 10,000 images on a sheet of paper 8.5 by 11 and being able to send that across, you know, to someone in another country or to in this country or next door or to somebody else you want to talk about? I mean, everything we do and say is in writing and in images. So this has, in my opinion, tremendous potential, and I just am hoping that it will become more and more recognized.
You know, if NASA doesn't pick up on this, and look, there's NASA guys listening, I'm sure. But if NASA doesn't pick up on it, you ought to get in touch with Steve Jobs. I bet he'll find a use for it over at Apple. Okay, let's take our final call. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Joe from Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
I was worried about you. I wasn't able to find your show last couple of nights. You need anything? You need any money or anything?
Always need money.
God bless you, buddy. How have you been?
I am doing well. Doing well.
Good. Good.
Did you have a question or comment for our guest, Ron Stewart?
I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. Ron, please, I apologize to Ron.
I haven't had
a chance to do any research. I'm doing some things working in the lab late tonight, and I was thinking of my friend Kevin Smith, and I had trouble last couple days logging on, Kevin, and I was concerned for you. Ron Stewart, please accept my personal apology. Dr. Resnick here.
Sure.
All right. Dr. Resnick, thanks for the call.
I'll follow up. Over and out. Bye-bye.
Right. Ron, that's one of the top scientists in this country. He has developed so many things and has so many patents, tons of that stuff used by the U.S. government right now. Some of it's flying up in space right now. So that's kind of an interesting call. All right, now look, what is it going to take, and we've only got a minute left, what does it take to move your technology forward?
I guess for somebody just to say, hey, let's take a look at it, and let's get together with this guy, and let's talk to him, and let's see if what he has is real, and then try to negotiate and work out circumstances to where I can show them that what I'm saying is the truth and prove it to them. I mean, you know, I can't, you know, everybody has to be understood that if they invented this, they would only want to, you know, do what's right, and they would want to be protected at the same time, because I've worked on this for 7 years, and that's a long time for anybody to work on anything. And I've done the technology and the expense out of my own pocket. So, you know, my pockets are not as deep as, you know, as some people, but I can keep on doing some of this to a point. But of course, then I'm limited in the budget in which I can do this in. So, you know, I personally, though, as far as UFOs are concerned, really they need to have more tangible, hard evidence. And if UFOs can be seen in a better photograph, that may be something where there might be one of the professional organizations that get together and say, let's pull together everybody that can do it, and let's try to get some research money to where it can be more scientifically accepted. In between, you know, mainstream science and ufology, there's got to be a ground, middle ground somewhere. And I think that's where things would improve for ufology.
All right, Ron, I want to thank you for being with us. Just stay on the phone line with me for a moment as we bring the show to a close. And let me say to our listeners on the various government computers tonight, there you have it. There's some technology that may be able to help you. So get in touch with him. He gave you his email address, and get in touch with him and see if this technology is something that would be useful for the country and useful for you, and reduce costs. And you can be the hero, you see. You come up with a way to reduce costs. And in fact, down at NASA, they're giving away, they give away cash prizes, I think, for people that find ways to cut costs. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be on Jerry's show tomorrow evening at this same time. You join us in the members area, all right? Until then, so long, everybody.